Session number 26546, Reel 10.
Major Highfield, Reel 10. You were telling me about how you'd been ordered to cross this mined bridge at GRA. If you'd like to, you got to the point where you'd ordered the signallers to walk across in relative safety, presumably.
Yes.
And then you were driving across carefully. Were you actually the driver? I mean, or did you have a driver with you?
No, the driver Flood, listened to my instructions. I stood up in the carrier and we manoeuvred very carefully so that we didn't cross any of the concrete covering plates where the mines were. Having got the other side, the infantry had only got half a mile or three quarters of a mile up the road and met the next position. The same procedure went on until eventually proceeded to Taormina, and we lost contact. The road in front on the coast was completely blown into the sea, and that was the end of our contact with the enemy. Our guns took part in supporting the crossing of the Messina Straits. I think we had one OP. The troop commander given the job was Harry Crossley in the lighthouse for the eventual crossing of the Straits. And after that, we were withdrawn and didn't proceed jointly with the other troops. Sometime later, we were told that we were going to return to UK, 50th Division, and also...
Now, had you seen Montgomery at all while you were in Sicily?
No.
Not at that stage?
No.
Okay, he didn't come to see you when he told you were going back to UK?
No, the divisional commander gave a talk in the old Roman amphitheatre at Taormina to all the officers of the division to tell them about the return to UK.
And how did people react?
Well, I think they were pleased to be out of it for a time. It had been very hard going with Marath, and I think we were looking forward to it.
Did they realise that would mean they'd be going into the D-Day operations, or had that not occurred to anyone at the time?
You took this in, but you didn't know what role you would have to play.
So you stayed at Taormina. That's where you fired across the straits, was it, or did you go closer to the straits?
We moved to gun positions and then returned, and in fact we spent the time until we embarked to go back to UK in the area of Giare. And when we moved down to board the troop ships...
That would be in October, would it?
It would be in October. We were delighted to see the same liner that had taken us to the Middle East, the Duchess of Bedford, out in the bay, and we embarked on her for the convoy home. This convoy was uneventful.
Which route did you go? Did you go through the Mediterranean?
We went through the Mediterranean. I can remember we stopped briefly at Algiers, but we were not allowed ashore. And eventually we sailed up the Mersey and were met, disembarked underneath the Liver building on the floating wharfs there. The regiment then entrained to go to the Cambridge area, and I was left to look after the baggage. I was the officer in charge of the small amount of baggage, had to be loaded in goods train, and we moved separately. And the destination was a village called Shelford, which was a few miles south of Cambridge city itself.
And what was it like being back in England? You'd been abroad a fair while by then, hadn't you?
About 2.5 years.
Did you notice, how did the atmosphere and the changes, did you notice much about the changes?
The main change was the full effect of food rationing and the whole wartime footing that seemed to pervade. In our area, there was huge numbers of Royal Air Force and American Air Force people deployed. In fact, I think they said that Cambridge countryside would sink into the sea if they put more airfields there. And I can remember passing sites with Thunderbolt aircraft of the 8th Air Force on and so on. We now prepared for Normandy, and it went on several courses.
What kind of courses were you going on this time?
Well, I can remember doing a course at Yarmouth, where they had taken over all the frontline hotels and used the swimming baths to practice fitting up the vehicles for an approach with waterproofing gear on. So we practiced putting the stuff on, then ran it into the swimming bath to see if it had worked, to try and get it out again.
So this is the waterproofing?
The waterproofing, yes.
How did you... I mean, people don't understand now how you could waterproof an order. How did you go about it?
Well, basically, you turned the exhaust pipe up into the air, and you lagged various places of the... on the engine itself, and that was about it. I remember it was very cold, and I had a bad attack of malaria at the time, which most of us had, which arose from our taking part in the Sicilian campaign. At one time, I believe there were 30% malaria cases in the division at this time. I had it about four times between January and April.
What was it like? What were the symptoms for you? I mean, how bad were the attacks is what I'm really getting at here.
They weren't too bad, but I was sent to Colchester General Hospital on one attack. And most of the other ones, you did what was called a 14-day course, but stayed with the regiment. However, the result of this, it was rather strange. Our commanding officer had changed, and Colonel Harris was our new CO. I was called in to see him one day, and he said, "We are part of the assault troops for the next operation in France. You have had malaria four times. We have to get down to assault scales. There will only be 9 officers instead of 11 in the battery, and you are going to be the captain in charge of the reinforcements."
And how did you feel about that?
I protested strongly, but pointing out I was the third senior troop commander in the regiment. But it was to no avail. He said, "We cannot afford you to have a wet landing and have another bout of malaria immediately." So, shortly after this, I left the regiment. I had 5 other junior officers under my command and about 65 men, and proceeded to Hampshire to a tented camp.
Where at?
A tented camp about 40 miles north of Portsmouth. We proceeded. We were there for some time. We moved forward in stages to other camps. and slowly got closer to Portsmouth. Eventually, we were in just a few miles north of Portsmouth when the actual D-Day operation started.
Now, what about, what were you actually doing with this party? I mean, were you carrying on training or were you just existing?
It was more or less existing and trying to keep fit. I used to run every day. And I can remember one very improvised sports meeting when rough tracks were laid out and there was a mile race, which I entered and was able to win. So, by now, D-Day took place.
What do you remember? What were the preparations for D-Day like? As far, because it was a very busy area, I'm sure. What sort of signs of the imminent D-Day did you see?
We didn't see much because we were in the countryside in these tented camps. No transport. And we moved slowly down. And the last camp I was in was close to Portsmouth, but probably north of the hill forts. And then we moved down to Southsea in the late evening of one day and went down and embarked on a landing craft.
Now, what day was that?
By this time, it was D plus three.
So the ninth?
Sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, yes. D plus three. And it was, I noted that we were going down the steps at Southsea, which could almost have been where Nelson went down before embarking for the last time before the Battle of Trafalgar. We pulled out into the Solent, stayed there overnight, and started off the next morning. It was an American manned landing craft with about 200 people on it. I made it my business to be close to the very junior American officer in charge, and we proceeded across the channel. You could hardly go wrong. There was a moored vessel about every 5 miles with a barrage balloon tied onto it. So this was the route, and we followed on. When we got near to the beaches, I told him to ask for the 30 Corps command ship, command vessel, which he did. And then we were directed to the 50th Div command vessel and told which beach to land on, which was Gold Beach.
How did you get ashore at Gold Beach? I mean, did you use your waterproofing there? Or did you not have any vehicles with you?
No, we were just standing up in...
your party didn't have any vehicles?
No, 200 mixed reinforcements with their equipment and arms on them.
So you disembark on the 10th, I presume?
D plus 4. And the naval officer stopped the craft about what seemed to me some 200 yards from the beach, and said this is as far as he was going because of the state of the tides and he didn't want to dry out on the beach. I said, I'm not convinced of this. Find out the depth of the water. He got one of his crew to jump off the bows, who disappeared completely. He then agreed to pull in a further 50 yards and dropped a man over, and it came high up on his chest, but he would go no further. So we had a wet landing after all, and about 150 yards to wade to the shore.
What was happening on the beach that day? I mean, what could you see as you landed?
Well, there were vehicles everywhere. It's a tremendous scene of activity. And we were directed to go into a nearby field. We'd all been issued with 48-hour ration packs. I think it was two 24 hours. I can remember sitting down in the field in the ditch close by, and opening my 24-hour pack and having some porridge, boiling some water and a cup of tea. We were there for most of that day, and about 4 o'clock, vehicles began to land near us and drove into a next door field to take off all the waterproofing stuff before they proceeded on to where they were going, were directed. I was amazed to see one of our own vehicles coming up in this manner. Immediately got all our party together and got them into the vehicles. We were a towed regiment, and the infantry who landed on D-Day were supported by self-propelled regiments, and 7-4 was only landing its equipment at this stage. So that on the night of D+4, I managed to reach the rear headquarters of the regiment and report to the second in command, and he then reported to the division that I had arrived. I hadn't got 65 men, but I had got the 5 officers and about 12 men who were the most useful vehicle mechanics, signalers, and so on. As a result of the report to division, a sharp retort came back: you are not allowed to have any more officers than your assault scales, and that we all had to go back to the beach. The reasoning behind this was that certain units might suffer severe casualties when most of the reinforcements would go to them and not back to their original units. So the next 10 days or so I spent on the beach, just off the beach, with others. I remember 2 or 3 times Germans raided the beach, a Fokker Wolf, a very small number of Fokker Wolf planes that had flown from Holland, and machine gunned the beach. We just looked after ourselves. Finally, I heard a message came that 2 of the captains had been wounded in the regiment, and I was called up to rejoin, and was directed to take over F Troop, which Philip Hamilton had been the troop commander. And the FOO who landed on D-Day with the brigade and who was awarded a military cross for his actions at this stage.
So that was F Troop of... which battery would that be?
It's 452 now.
You keep changing it.
It's very difficult.
So 452 battery.
Yes.
And... Who were your who was in F Troop at the time? Any key figures? You were commanding it, obviously, but who is subalterns?
Jimmy James was my GPO.
What was he like?
A very sound Welshman. He didn't dress very well, but he knew his job inside out. The junior subaltern was called Anderson, and universally called Andy, as the troop leader. The 151 Brigade at this time had fought continuous battles with the Panzerlehr Division, a very experienced and well-armed division commanded at one stage by Bayerlein, and they'd fought themselves to a standstill. I eventually went up to the OP a day or so later and took over from Peter Edge, who commanded E Troop. And the drill was really a static drill now. with, and the OP party was left for 3 days with, and then relieved and returned to the gun position, which was the rotation that we followed over the next 2 months. Our positions changed slightly, but the same gun position was used. The line position ran through a place called Lingever, Lingevres, La Belle Epine, and a very tough place, village called Hotto, H-O-T-T-O-T. Over the next 2 months, I was at various OPs on this line, and there was one major counterattack on the neighbouring division, 49 Div, which was repelled. I was sent out on one occasion to a flank with 49 Div and to try and locate, cross-locate mortar positions. But in the heavily wooded country, it was terribly difficult to do this. Gradually, the artillery took over a plan of dousing anything that fired with an enormous concentration of artillery. This was the day, the procedure, when you went really to regimental targets, M targets, then to divisional targets, UNCLE targets, and there were even corps targets, which were V. A coordinated time was usually arranged, and the scale of fire would be 1 or 2 rounds per gun. And you can, so you would get something like, in a division, a divisional target, maybe 100 guns all firing at the same time to douse the position.
Just a couple of rounds each.
That's it.
And how was this coordinated? I mean, it sounds phenomenally complicated. I mean, how did they know where to fire? You know, I mean.
Well, the setup was there. The adjutant did the regimental targets and his staff, and the HQRA did the divisional targets, and the corps target was done also by the artillery staff there.
Right. The idea was just to douse a whole area,
exactly.
Cover it in shells.
That's it. I experienced one occasion when we were trying to pick up this cross bearing on mortars. Shell reps were reported all the time, and
shell reps. What's that?
An enemy gun position firing. You took a bearing on it and reported the bearing, and your position was known. And this helped to produce a possible area, which would then perhaps be dealt with on a night firing plan, with again a major concentration of guns. The country was very bad from the infantry point of view. It was so dense. However, eventually things started to move on nearer the junction with the American forces.
That's my fault. I've slightly interrupted you. You were telling a story about how you were trying to locate some mortars, and you said you got the shell wraps. That's where I interrupted you. What happened that time?
Well, I got the Panzer Division was pretty active at this time, and they had naval werfers, and they would douse the forward infantry position with half a dozen of these rather frightening weapons, which got into the area where I was. I was eventually told off on the wireless by the CO that I was not out there to gain an MC and to get myself into a favourable position where I was not being shelled, which I did. It was terribly difficult to try and take these bearings and get accuracy. Finally, the line began to move forward on the American front, and we were moved, Tilly was taken, and we moved round to down to a place called Mount Pinsel.
Mount Pinsel.
Pinsel, which is the highest point in Normandy.
That would be in August, would it, or a bit earlier?
We moved to the Mount Pinsel area on the 6th of August. It had been captured by 43 Div, and we were to undertake a drive down towards Conde sur Noire. I have a picture in my mind of our infantry moving up through the rear areas of the 43 Div, and the cheerful byplay between the two divisions of the infantry, and the humour of the British soldier.
Can you give us some example? Tell us a bit more about that.
So, 43 Div would say, we've managed to capture the thing, now you come on to do the easy part. Or our people, the Durhams, would be saying, we've now come to help you out. But moving as they did all the time in Normandy, a section one side of the road, a section the other side of the road, all spaced out, and this back play was very, very interesting. Eventually we attacked and Ken Park, my battery commander, used to put Peter Edge in with the first move, and then I would move through and take over from Peter on the next phase. This is what happened. The 6th DLI made the initial attack, and a very popular officer was unfortunately killed, who was Spike Galloway. He had been wounded in earlier operations and returned to them, and was a great loss.
This attack was on where was it again, sorry?
Going towards Conde.
And you were providing the barrage for the 6th?
We were supporting them. And the operation took about a week, with quite heavy fighting and quite heavy artillery responses from the enemy, but always another brigade would go through, and in fact Conde was reached in about a week's time, and we were then out of action, and the Falaise pocket was being isolated.